hotels.
What's up, Wisconsin? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. So we had this wonderful conversation yesterday, Anya, about library book bans and all the things going on legislatively in the states. If you missed that episode, you can check it out at civicmedia.us. You can also always grab the app for free from your favorite app store. Just search for Civic Media and there shall you find the app. But I forgot to mention in our entire coverage yesterday why I was talking about book bans. And that's because yesterday was National Book Day, a day to celebrate what we should enjoy here in the United States, which is free access, freedom of access to information and books, especially in our public libraries. And as luck would have it, this is going to be cut 11, Anya. Jimmy Kimmel did me a solid last night and gave a little shout out to librarians. Again, if you missed our coverage talking through and about book bans and the threat that this really is to the fundamental freedoms that I think we all hold dear, whether we're Republican or Democratic or centrist or not really all that engaged in politics. Again, in honor of World Book Day yesterday and the hour that we spent discussing this with all of our great listeners and callers, I thought we'd take a listen to Jimmy Kimmel celebrating World Book Day. This is last night on Late Night with Jimmy Kimmel.
This World Book Day is a weird one. There are at least 100 bills in various red states, three of which have become law already, threatening librarians with prison for the crime of lending books. Books that aren't government approved, which to me not only is this the opposite of what our country is supposed to be about, it's completely nuts. We're going to throw librarians in jail for loaning out Huckleberry Finn. This is not what they signed up for. I think it's disgusting and wrong and anti-American, but don't take it from me. Take it from these real-life librarians.
I'm a librarian.
I'm a librarian.
I've been a librarian for 26 years.
We're librarians.
Masters of the library sciences.
Not groomers.
Not sex fiends.
Not pornographers.
We're the people who hand out library cards.
We do story times. We put away the books you guys leave out on the tables instead of putting them on the reshelf cart.
The clearly labeled reshelf cart.
You can read that, right?
We're not the deep state.
We're not Satanists.
We're librarians.
But some people want to make us criminals. Put us in jail.
I would not do well in jail.
It's not meth. It's Judy Blume.
Judy effing Blume.
Judy effing Blume.
Fine us thousands of dollars?
Like we have thousands of dollars.
Make books the enemy.
Make knowledge the enemy.
And you know what we say to that?
Shh. Shut the f*** up. Shut the f*** up. Please, shut the f*** up.
What's wrong with you?
Paid for by Americans against librarians.
Again, apologies for some of the, you know, borderline language there. I bleeped out. Thank you, Jimmy Kimmel. But in that comedy lies all kinds of truth, right? So again, my thanks to librarians and happy World Book Day, a day late. Again, if you want to listen to our conversation that we had for about an hour yesterday, go to civicmedia.us, navigate to the shows, and click down. You'll see a whole list of all the great shows. My colleague Todd Alba before me. Matt and Air on Air, Devils, as well as the Maggie Dawn Show. And you can listen to all of our What the Heck Are We Doing With These Book Bans coverage from yesterday.
Maggie, don't feel too bad about being late on it. I think most librarians are used to receiving things a couple days later than they were supposed to be delivered. So
a little grace period.
You
there,
have a grace period. You do, however, owe them 10 cents.
10 cents
for your
10
lateness.
Cents for
so
being
other than that. You 10 cents split between all librarians everywhere.
Yeah, so fractional cents to every single librarian for me being a little late and being very clear about World Book Day yesterday. Also, pretty major news yesterday. The president signed the aid package into law. It came through and signed it, I believe, this morning, Wednesday morning. Today's Wednesday, right?
I think so.
I'm losing track. Signed it into law Wednesday morning. The Senate took the vote yesterday. And just as I shared on Monday, how our delegation that represents Wisconsin voted, which was specifically on the Ukraine aid package, which was every single Republican voted against the Ukraine aid package, which I'm going to just start framing it. The Wisconsin GOP House of Representatives caucus is the Putin caucus. That's it, period, full stop. So the Senate took the vote yesterday, and I'd be remiss if I didn't follow up and share with everybody how our two senators voted. You want to hazard a guess, Anya? We got Senator Tammy Baldwin and Senator Big Thinker Ron Johnson. Care to hazard a guess on the vote?
Oof. I would guess that Tammy Baldwin probably did the right thing, and I have a strong guess that Ron Johnson probably did the wrong thing.
Ah, look at
but
that.
But that's just me, lifelong Wisconsinite, pattern recognition, something in there, yeah.
Right. Yeah, of course, Ron Big Thinker Johnson, architect and messenger of the illegal fake slate of electors trying to rob hundreds of thousands of Wisconsinites of their vote back in 2020, can't follow the bouncing ball of Ron Johnson's versions of denial about his role in the insurrection. Yeah, that senator, you know, that guy, voted against the Ukraine aid package. Again, trotting out just a bunch of nonsense. I don't like to see the Ukrainian people being used as cannon fodder in a proxy war between the West and Russia. No, pretty sure Russia invaded Ukraine's border and now threatens to invade, according to Republicans and our intelligence community, other nations that we are allies with in Europe. So proxy war? No, we call this out and out aggression. He's stupid. I can't give the guy, there's no good faith reading of Ron Johnson's nonsense. Proxy war? Vladimir Putin is a very real everyday threat to the freedoms that we all enjoy as Americans and to the entire Western alliance as represented through NATO. What are you talking about? He went on to also say this, from my standpoint, it was Leader McConnell that blew the leverage we had to make sure that we secure America's border before we spend more than $100 billion helping other countries defend theirs. Again, Senator, the border shouldn't be, used as, quote, cannon fodder in a proxy war between Democrats and Republicans in this country. We should have actually gotten the bill done that your Republican colleagues in the Senate proposed to strengthen our southern border. But again, Mr. Johnson, they're separate issues. See, we should be able to demand of our elected officials that they both walk and chew gum at the same time. So I'm going to give you all Ron Johnson's phone numbers. Because why not? Light them up, civic media. Tell Ron Johnson he has no business being in the Senate, that he's wrong on Ukraine, that he's wrong to keep tying what our responsibilities are to defend freedom to our border. They're related, but can you not understand that you can do two things at the same time? Why did you kill the bill in the Senate that would have strengthened the border? Give good old Ron a call. Tell him what you think. If you want to call his local office in southeastern Wisconsin, that number is 414-276-7282. Give Ron Johnson a call, 414-276-7282. We will put that in our show notes from today as well. And if you would like to give him a buzz in D.C., just in case you miss him in his Milwaukee office, I've got that number too. Do not fret. His D.C. number is 202-224-5323. That's 202-224-5323. 224-5323. And as luck would have it, this radio show host also dug a little deeper to find his actual email address. Because, of course, when you Google Ron Johnson email address, it takes you to one of those, you know, submit your question or comment here.
Then you totally get a response from,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like immediately.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd get his actual email, at least the one I was able to identify. So would you like Ron Johnson's email, Civic Media? I would think so. Let's hit him with a bunch of emails. Tell him he needs to smarten up and do better, shall we? Here we go. R-O-N, so Ron, bottom slash. Yeah. Is that what that's called? Bottom slash?
Underscore?
Underscore.
Yeah, there we go.
Like the underscore space thing. R-O-N, Ron, underscore Johnson, at johnson.senate.gov. That's Ron, underscore Johnson, at johnson.senate.gov. Tell him what you think. I love this. My good friend Chris Casper, friend of the Civic Media Radio Network engineering guru extraordinaire, texting in from the 608, why bother calling Senator Johnson? He never as a human being answer the phone. It's literally an answering machine. Let's fill the answering machine, shall we? Again, his number in D.C., 202-224-5323. Ask Ron Johnson why he's a Russian propagandist, why he's not defending America's freedoms, why he's not standing up and doing the right thing. You want to call him locally? 414-276-7282. What a loser. I mean, should we listen to Ron Johnson maybe talk about the climate again? We only have a minute. I'm going to have to let that go. Gosh darn it. I mean, Ron Johnson is the U.S. Senate version of Robin Voss, right? Like, I don't know anybody in Wisconsin that likes Robin Voss. I don't know anybody in Wisconsin that really likes Ron Johnson. It was just the guy that they were stuck with. When we come back, I'm going to talk to you all about what's going on in Trump's voter manipulation trial happening in Lower Manhattan, about some of the rhetoric, some of the arguments being made. It is truly extraordinary, and I don't mean that in a good way. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. You want to join the show in our conversation, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Discussion of the Trump trial in Manhattan coming up next. I break chains all by myself. Won't let my freedom ride in hell. Hey, I'ma keep on running because the winner don't quit on themselves. Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Happy Earth Week, everybody. Really excited. We've got a great guest coming up, as we do all week, every Maggie Dawn show. We've got a different take on Earth Week. My guest today is a new guest to the show. He's going to be talking about Wisconsin's biggest pension fund, which is WRS. It's the Employees Retirement System, the Wisconsin Retirement System. And a push to ask that pension fund to make sure that the billions of dollars that it invests are being invested in ways that help conserve Wisconsin's beautiful natural resources and the environment, not just for us today, but for our grandkids and great-grandkids a couple of generations from now. Really excited to have that guest. Don't miss it. He's going to be joining me. It's Pete Konotek of Climate Safe Pensions Wisconsin going to be joining me at the top of the hour. So you do not want to miss that. Of course, if you've been listening this week, also, I'm giving away trash pickers. I recently got myself one so that when I go on my little walks on the east side of Milwaukee, I pick up some trash, take a little garbage bag with me. If you'd like to win a trash picker, giving three away this week, use the app. You can get it free from any app store. Text in your name, email, and cell phone number. We will enter you to win. You can enter more than once, and we will draw those on Friday and get in touch with you to give you your trash picker to help pick our way to a better environment tomorrow. But I wanted to spend some time today talking about what's been going on in Trump's voter manipulation trial in New York. I call it a voter manipulation trial because at the root of this it is a bunch of illegal conduct that occurred to keep relevant, important information that voters had a right to know from the voting public back in 2016. That's what this case is about. Okay? If it's not the hush money trial, yes, it's about hush money, but why? What was the overarching purpose? It was to manipulate voters, to keep important information from them. And this seems to be a theme for the former MAGA president. But before we get into some of the details of the evidence and the testimony that's been presented in the first couple of days of the trial, I thought we needed to start on a slightly lighter note. Trump, of course, complaining about everything related to the trial. More on that after my special guest in the 3 o'clock hour, because this stuff all matters. But I thought this, he's been falling asleep. Everybody's heard about this. But what I found really shocking and pretty disgusting was that it's not just the sleeping. He's having some GI issues in court. And by the way, this isn't some grand federal courtroom. This is a dingy little courtroom in Lower Manhattan. It is like, I've been in those courtrooms. Not fun. Not large. Don't have the world's best HVAC, just saying.
Probably already smells a little like farts from the start.
Perhaps.
Only aided by the former president.
Yeah.
Fun.
So I just thought we would, this is, again, a guy that's in court every day. His name is Ben Mesalas. I might be saying this right. Mesalas. I wanted to share some of the coverage. He was getting interviewed by a news outlet, and here's what Ben had to say. This is cut to Miss Anya.
Returning to the court proceedings as well, Maggie Haberman reports that Donald Trump continued to fall asleep during the proceedings as well. And, you know, what I'm hearing from my sources as well is that, you know, and I'm hearing from credible sources who know what's going on in the courtroom. And what I'm hearing is that, take it for what it's worth, but that Donald Trump is actually farting in the courtroom, and that it's very stinky around him. It's a putrid odor in the courtroom, and that Trump's lawyers are like repulsed by the scent and the smell. And I'm not just saying that to be like, oh, funny. I'm actually, you know, we have good sources there. And I'm hearing it from actual credible people that as he's kind of falling asleep, he is actually passing gas. And that his lawyers are really struggling with the smell. I think you'll actually start to hear more of that. But again, from real credible sources. Now, take it for what it's worth. They may be going off the record, I mean, on background and telling me that because of, you know, it's the Midas touch. And, they, you know, they think that we want to hear that. So you could judge it how you want to judge it. But real credible people who are there have saying that it's putrid around him.
Ugh. I mean, I'll just say this. Question. If you had to be locked in a very small room for, say, 4 to 8 hours with either Joe Biden or Donald Trump, whom would you pick? I don't know. I think I'm going with Joe. Just a pretty clear choice there. Compounding matters, Donald Trump, it seems to be whining about a whole lot of stuff that should be kind of beside the point. So this is cut one. Again, you know, he's got 91 felony charges pending against him, and this is what the guy wants to talk about?
I'm sitting here for days now, from morning till night, in that freezing room, freezing. Everybody was freezing in there. And all for this, and this is your result. Look at that. Each one of them is a story. And it's very unfair. Very bad thing. Very bad thing. The whole world is watching this hoax. You got a DA that's out of control. You have a judge that's highly conflicted. The whole thing is a mess. And you have the leading candidate and leading crooked Joe Biden by a lot. He's the one that should be in trial. He's a crook. You got a crooked president.
Okay, so this was said on April 18th or 19th. Which is also after the gag order was put in place, by Judge Mershon. I'm going to talk about that at length today because it is really scary stuff. But, you know, like, just based on your own human experience, Anya, when it's really cold, is it easier or more difficult to fall asleep?
Oh, I would say if it's cold, it's like, it's hard. It's, I like it a little cool, but it's harder to fall asleep.
Correct.
For sure, yeah. A warm room.
Oh, yeah, that'll knock you out. It's too cold. Well, then why are you snoozing? Also, if you're going to be stuck in a small enclosed space with someone that's having GI problems, I think I would be keeping the temperature around a cool 60 degrees as well. Like, probably no one in that courtroom wants the temperature creeping up by 70, around 72 or anything higher than that. And again, all the negative comments about the judge and the DA, the gag order was in place. So where do we end up landing? Of course we end up landing yesterday in court, an incredibly testy exchange and hearing on the gag order. The prosecution is asking for sanctions. I'm going to talk about that in our next segment because all of this matters. Not only is this about voter manipulation, this is about whether or not we are all going to be treated equally under the law, or if we have kings in this country, I'd like to think we should be getting equal treatment under the law, and that the United States is not a place where we anoint kings. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm going to keep going deep on the Trump voter manipulation trial after these brief messages. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back, Wisconsin. I am Maggie Dawn. We are airing live from beautiful downtown Waukesha. A bit brisk, but sunny and beautiful. Good afternoon, folks in Lake Air Radio Land. So fun to do this statewide. I really enjoy that. If you want to participate, wherever you may be in Wisconsin or beyond, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC, talking about the Trump voter manipulation trial. And again, wanted to start on a bit of a lighter note. Again, some pretty funny stuff coming out of late night last night after what was a pretty fiery courtroom exchange over the gag order, which Trump basically violates on a daily basis. So let's take a little listen to some of the late night, and then I'll actually get serious about what's going on there.
All Trump cares about is crowd size. One day he'll be sitting in the electric chair bragging about all the people who showed up to watch him. The day began with some fireworks. There were several heated exchanges between Trump's lawyers and the judge in the hearing about whether or not he definitely violated the judge's gag order. Judge Mershon told Trump's lead attorney, a guy named Todd Blanche, that his arguments didn't make sense, that he presented nothing, and that he was losing all credibility with the court. To his credit, Blanche fired back. He said, "Your Honor, I lost all credibility when I agreed to represent Donald Trump. That is not an issue." But fortunately, Trump didn't hear any of it. He was sound asleep. Let one Rip Van Winkle is dozing off so often they're going to need one of those NBA sweat wiper kits to mop the drool puddles off his desk. Why Trump hasn't already been punished for violating the gag order, I don't know. I'm sure he's driving his lawyers nuts. 20 minutes after his lawyer told the judge, "President Trump is being very careful to comply with your order," Trump very carefully posted this highly conflicted, to put it mildly. By the way, you can't put it mildly when you're using all caps. It's impossible. "Judge Juan Mershon has taken away my constitutional right to free speech. Everybody is allowed to talk and lie about me, but I'm not allowed to defend myself. This is a kangaroo court, and the judge should recuse himself." He violated the gag order during a hearing about whether he violated the gag order.
First of all, I do not care for Jimmy Kimmel's joke about the electric chair. I think that's in very bad taste. But yeah, violating the gag order and the hearing about whether or not he violated the gag order and what should be done about it. It's insane. Listen, the guy can engage in political speech, but what you can't do is target the judge. Now, where that line is exactly, we can debate, but you can't take Trump's comments sort of in isolation. You have to look at the overall picture. And we have limits on our speech. We're going to get into that in great detail because the consequences of Donald Trump's speech are grave. Downright matters of life and death. And he knows it. He knows that he basically commands a whole crusading army of MAGA-lites, MAGA-acolytes, MAGA-acolytes. That's the problem. My thanks to Terry from Cross Plains and another texter from 920 helping me correct that the journalist that we heard a little bit before is a guy named Ben Mycelis from the Midas Touch podcasts. So thanks so much for the pronunciation corrections, everybody. Love it. It's a collective learning exercise.
And Terry mentioned, too, that they've taken your homework and already called, as they've written, Moron.
Yeah, Moron.
That's funny.
I love it. Terry from Cross Plains gets an A+ for audience participation today.
Good job, Terry.
Love it. If you want to join our convo this afternoon, 855-75-CIVIC. But all this stuff, no laughing matter, though this one I thought was great. This is from Jordan Klepper on The Daily Show. The guy is incapable of keeping his mouth shut for 2 minutes. Has Trump ever considered paying himself hush money? Yep. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where we're at, everybody. But listen, the whole point here, the reason I call this a voter manipulation trial, is that Donald Trump's tactic has been really consistent, and it's to spew a bunch of lies, gin up anger, separate us, try to act like we have fundamental value differences with our neighbors and friends and family. We don't. And then withhold key information, try to conceal the truth from the American public. That's why this case in New York is important. It's not my, I've talked about this before. I don't like the case. It's 8 years old. I think the feds should have prosecuted him, but we're here and that's what it is about. So the trial kicked off on Monday in earnest. We had gone through jury selection and the first witness that the prosecution called was a guy by the name of David Pecker. David Pecker owns the National Enquirer. And what David Pecker spent Monday and then Tuesday until we had to have the fight about the gag order, what he spent Monday and Tuesday testifying about was his relationship with Donald Trump, how it began. Donald Trump, for anybody that was around in the 80s and early 90s, he was basically a guy that used tabloid newspapers to his best advantage. He was a genius at it. Part of the ghost-written book, The Art of the Deal, talks about, you know, any publicity, even if it's negative, is great because people are talking about you. This has always been Donald Trump's brand. He doesn't care if he's lying or how you get in the media so long as he is in the media. So David Pecker talked about how his relationship with Donald Trump really deepened and became more frequent conversations either with Trump himself or some of his surrogates like Michael Cohen, his attorney, starting in 2015, right after Donald Trump announced his presidential run. And they ended up in 2015 meeting in Trump Tower. So this is Trump, Michael Cohen, and David Pecker to talk about how David Pecker was going to have the National Enquirer write stories that were positive for Donald Trump and write stories that slammed and were very negative about his political opponents. Many of you may remember one of the most notorious of those articles, which was planted by Michael Cohen, was about Ted Cruz and his father, and they were just really salacious. It was all lies. It's interesting now because Ted Cruz is now a Donald Trump acolyte, which I think is really interesting. And so part of this strategy also included what folks in the tabloid business refer to as catch and kill, which is they catch wind that there is a negative story out there, that someone is making claims that would hurt Donald Trump as a presidential candidate. The National Enquirer figures out who that is, reaches out to them, says, I want the exclusive rights to your story, and I'll give you $100,000 for it, or $130,000, or $5,000 for it. And the person goes, great, give me that check. Sign the check over, sign the exclusive rights over. And then David Pecker takes the story and puts it in a safe in his office, locks it up, and it never sees the light of day, and they never publish anything about it.
This is akin to, like, if somebody bought a painting and they don't have to put it on display, they can just put it in their basement. It's their property, even though it's a story. Is that kind of what you're saying, Maggie?
That is exactly right.
Okay, I get it.
That's why it's the exclusive rights. So anyways, one of the first times David Pecker he's going to resume his testimony on Thursday. One of the first sorts of catch and kill iterations that Cohen, Trump, and Pecker went through related to this false claim by someone who was a doorman in the Trump building that he had gotten someone that worked there pregnant. It turned out to be false, but David Pecker bought it for $30,000 and shelved it. Of course, all of this is really interesting because it's not like the National Enquirer fact checks things. They publish lies all the time and published a boatload of lies about Trump's opponents. But we're catching and killing any story, all stories that could have been harmful to Donald Trump back then. One interesting artifact of David Pecker's testimony is he's talking about New York back in sort of the 90s and then into the 2000s. And it's not that long ago when people were actually buying tabloids in hard copy. It wasn't all the stuff on social media where people would actually make phone calls on landlines. What? People had phones on their desks. I mean, imagine all that. Who knew? And by the way, Pecker and Trump have known each other since the 80s. I mean, it goes back a really, really long time. So that's what's happening with the David Pecker testimony. And he pointed out there's very specific testimony that he's asked. Was this agreement that you would go buy negative stories and then shut them away and lock them up forever? Was this in writing? He said, no, it was. He testified. No, it's a informal agreement amongst us friends. Ugh, wish I had friends like that. You know? But again, this is the core factual predicate that Pecker will then testify in detail about on Thursday that leads up to the catching and killing of the Stormy Daniels cheating scandal. And again, this is about keeping relevant information from the American public. Opposition research exists, but not only did he not want this information to get out to the American public, it was the very end of October in 2016, so it would have been devastating. It came on the heels of the Billy Bush Access Hollywood tape, grab him by the you-know-whats. But it was clearly done to assist his presidential campaign. That's why David Pecker's testimony Monday and Tuesday was so critical. He's like, no. We were buds since the 80s, but we started talking on nearly a weekly or daily basis after he announced his candidacy for president. They didn't hatch up this plan to catch and kill negative stories because, remember, art of the deal, bad press is good press. Who cares? That was Donald Trump before. He had been in the papers many times about affairs and Marla Maples and this, that, and the other. Never cared about that before because art of the deal, even bad press is good press. But Pecker, Cohen, and Trump, after Trump says he's running for president, that's when this becomes a big deal. That's when they start catching and killing these stories, which makes that a campaign contribution, which makes it illegal to not report it. And that's, of course, what they did. It's basically a cover-up of the cover-up, right? So it's a federal law violation, a state law violation of the catch and kill, clearly designed to help his presidential campaign. Because, and here's a really critical point. Again, this is from Pecker's testimony just over Monday and Tuesday. He was being asked about the false claim by the doorman that Trump had impregnated someone at Trump Tower. And as they approached the election time, it was very clear that this couldn't be verified. It was a false story. Pecker came to Cohen and said, hey, can we release this guy from his exclusive deal? Because this is false. It doesn't matter. And Cohen asked Pecker, well, when do you want to release him from this exclusive arrangement? And Pecker said now, which was before the election. Pecker testified that Cohen responded, no, release him after the election. So, yeah, it was always about the election. And that, my friends, is a crime. But I think one of the more disturbing elements of what's happening in this Manhattan courtroom is related to Donald Trump's attacks on our judicial system, on our judges, on prosecutors, on people that are doing their jobs. Now, the court has had a gag order. Judge Mershon told Trump, you can't talk about the prosecutors, witnesses, jurors, or court staff, dating from late March of this year, but he keeps violating it. I'm going to tell you more about that after these really brief messages. Don't go anywhere because the violations are numerous and getting worse. I'll detail what happened yesterday when we come back after these quick messages. Same old town doesn't mean that. Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, talking about the Trump voter manipulation trial happening in Lower Manhattan. The big fireworks are now about the gag order, first entered in late March. Of course, if you recall, almost immediately after that, because the gag order did not include the families, in other words, Mr. Trump, you can't say nasty things about the families of court personnel, Trump went on Truth Social and started talking about Judge Mershon's daughter. Eh, that's nice. So then he had to amend the order to include the families of prosecutors, judges, and court personnel. But Trump continues. He's been slamming Michael Cohen. He's been going after Stormy Daniels. And it got really bad when the dip of all dips, the master dip, Jesse Waters, who's a Fox News commentator, basically talked about some details about jurors. It led one juror to show up and say people were able to identify me after Mr. Waters talked about it. And Mr. Waters basically used the same language that Donald Trump had used in slamming the whole process and the judge and all this stuff. So he amplified it. Trump then sort of altered what Waters said, reposted it on Truth Social, then Waters posted Trump's post on X. So this is what happens with this stuff, right? It snowballs and it gets amplified by social media. So Christopher Conroy, the prosecutor, told the judge on Tuesday that Trump had broken the gag order repeatedly and hasn't stopped. He does it right here in the hallway outside the courtroom. Yep. He knows what he's not allowed to do. He does it anyways. And you heard from Jimmy Kimmel in the little comedic relief this hour that the defense attorney just, no, this is just him responding to political attacks. Well, attacking the judge and the families and the witnesses when you know there is a mob of angry MAGAites out there violates the gag order. Like, stop talking about these people. Defend yourself on the merits. I didn't do this. The evidence will prove my innocence. Let your lawyers speak for you. But this is sort of ridiculous. If this was any other defendant, they'd be in jail right now. That's bottom line. They would be in jail. And it got really bad for Attorney Blanche yesterday. The judge said, I hate to keep coming back to this, but you're not offering me anything to support your argument. You think he went to the same law school as Alina Haba? Ugh. And it went on and on. And by the way, the content of what Jesse Waters and then Trump had sort of posted and shared was basically claiming that jurors were lying and that they were liberal activists and that they lied to get on the jury. And then he talked about detail. That is about as incendiary as it gets. And all of this stuff matters. And I'll just say this. I think the whole Trump sort of cult for a lot of the true believers, the MAGAites, it has clouded some people's judgments in a way that I think if they were able to step back and look at it, they would say, well, what am I even doing? One of those is infamous attorney Alan Dershowitz, who last week said something that nearly every legal scholar I know, every criminal defense lawyer, criminal prosecutor just went, what is this guy even talking about? Like, no. But he got on Fox News and said something I can't believe came out of Alan Dershowitz's mouth. This was April 16th, so just last week. This is Alan Dershowitz. This is going to be cut number 4 on Fox News.
Oh, the gag order is unconstitutional. You cannot prevent the defendant from attacking the witnesses, from attacking the judge's daughter, if the judge's daughter could be a basis for disqualification.
No, wrong. Like, do we have a sound for like a hand slap? Like, no. Yeah.
I don't know. That's just me with my mouth.
Got it. Right. Like, yes, you can. You have your lawyers make those arguments in an appeal. Like, when you are commanding an angry mob, you can't say whatever you want. Just like you can't sit in a crowded theater and yell, fire! And all of these things have consequences. Oftentimes, dire life or death consequences. None of this is happening in a vacuum. It's extraordinarily disturbing. And by the way, if you forget who Jesse Waters is and how he came to fame, he got plugged in to fill the hole in the Fox News lineup that Tucker left. But before that, he also gained some fame. This was back in 2016. He used to do this sort of like hit piece journalism. He'd walk around on the street and ask people stuff. And he went down into New York City's Chinatown neighborhood in 2016, asked some folks some questions, and then feigned a really, really offensive accent and mocked people. It wasn't just the accent. He was viciously, meanly mocking people and put out a whole bunch of stereotypes. The guy's a jerk. And so, like Trump, no wonder they're retweeting the stuff said by one another. Here's what's incredible. Okay, during the hearing, and remember, Trump, during jury selection, sort of grunted and mumbled at a juror at one point, and Mershon had to tell him to shut up. Mershon has told him, you could end up in jail if you keep violating the order. So here we are. Prosecutors are asking $1,000 a violation and saying, please admonish the defendant again. He could go to jail. Trump walks out of the hearing and posts on Truth Social, accusing Justice Mershon of taking away his right to free speech and saying he's not allowed to defend himself as he sits there with a phalanx of high-priced lawyers. Give me a freaking break. It's all very, very, very concerning. I've got a really great guest coming up. Again, a take on Earth Week that you might not have been thinking about. But don't you worry, I'm going to tell you why and give you data and facts about why Trump popping off about all these things and violating the gag order, why it matters. because people's lives are being threatened. I'm going to get there after my next special Earth Week guest. His name is Pete Knotek of Climate Safe Pensions Wisconsin. Do you know where your money is? Don't go anywhere, anybody. We've got your news, weather, and sports up next, and then my next great Earth Week guest. Stay tuned, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.